Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Welcome. If this is your first time here, welcome. I'm glad you're here. You may find this isn't quite your typical business interview podcast, and that's kind of how we want it. But if you have been here before, welcome back. I appreciate you being here, and I hope to be better today than I was last time. Let's get into it. After nearly 500 interviews, it's great to have a guest on the show with a business that's unlike any other guest I've had. That's today. Back in 2010, my guest and a business partner got started in business when they bought the now famous Tampa Bay Comic Convention for just $5,000. Today, he's the co-founder of Imagineerium, the company behind the Tampa Bay, Indiana, San Francisco, Atlanta, and Michigan comic conventions. This conversation took place the week after their inaugural Indiana Comic Convention, where they saw an attendance of 55,000 people over the weekend. Now, let's hack Stephen Solomon. Recently, I've been wondering, am I the only one who at least once a week, probably two or three times a week, becomes struck with an idea for a new product or business or podcast or something and immediately go and see if the .com is available? Seriously, am I the only one? I don't think so. I think you probably do that too. And next time you do it, you should go to hover.com/hack, because when that URL is available for you, you can get it for 10% off. And because, as you almost always see, like me, the .com is not available. But at hover.com/hack, they have this unique sort of search engine that will give you the next best extensions available. They have over 400, and they put the best ones in front of you. So you can choose those if you wish. Plus, when you do buy a domain from them, if you have any troubles at all, their customer support team is absolutely stellar. Plus, they give you personalized email to match your domain and free Whois privacy. So remember, next time you're struck with that idea for a new project, go to hover.com/hack. Get started today, and you'll get 10% off that next domain for your next project idea. There's no upsells. It's a clean, beautiful user interface. And best of all, a discount for you. Once again, go to hover.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very special guest. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, my pleasure. We've been trying to do this for a while, and so I'm looking forward to it. So let's jump into it, shall we?
Sure.
Stephen, I believe you're a man who probably goes under many titles, but today we're going to talk to Stephen, the entrepreneur. So as an entrepreneur, Stephen, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I think it's sort of a general attribute that can be applied to just entrepreneurship in general, and then how I compare it to people that aren't entrepreneurs, but it just comes naturally to me, and I think it comes naturally to all entrepreneurs, is just sort of the drive. I don't really take a day off of work because it doesn't really seem like work to me. I'm sort of just 365 days a year, I'm always looking to build. And I think people call it drive, but I don't really see it as drive because it's just natural to me. It just comes natural to me. It's just sort of how I am. And compared to other people that, I don't know, sit around and play video games or just do other sort of simple pleasures, you know, I still enjoy my life, but I just sort of have this instinct to just want to keep building. And I guess to most people that would seem like work, but I guess it doesn't seem like work to me.
Does it not seem like work to you, do you think, because perhaps you've chosen a business that is something that you're really into?
I think that's That's probably a big part of it. It certainly helps. But I feel like if it were something that I considered mine, even if I didn't necessarily have a passion for the industry, I would still have the drive to want to make it succeed. But yeah, I have a personal interest in comic books and pop culture and the things that my business is about. So that probably does help a lot.
Punk rock and comic books is what your website says.
Yeah, my partner and I, we actually just coincidentally are both into 1980s punk rock.
Nice. I like it. Well, that drew me in anyways. So I guess it's good to have that there.
Yeah.
So this is Imaginarium we're talking about, which now runs 5 different Comic-Cons, I believe, across the United States.
Yes.
And you didn't necessarily start the very initial part of it. You ended up buying it, I believe, in 2000?
2010 is when we bought the Tampa Comic and Toy Convention at the time. And that's when we bought it. It was in 2010.
So did you own businesses before this?
My business partner, for a short time, we were on the comic book dealer side of things. So we bought and sold vintage comics and everything. And I did that on my own for a while, and he did that on his own. And so before I was running conventions, all through high school and through college, I was a vintage comic book dealer. So that was my business before running shows.
Oh, nice. One of those side hustles, like buying and selling comics.
That's right. Yeah.
We all know somebody like that. So the way I understand it, the Tampa Bay Comic Con is now massive, but in 2010, it wasn't at all, right? It was something that was very much dwindling, and you guys took it over.
Yeah. So the Tampa Comic and Toy Convention started in 2000. It was started by a man named Tim Gordon. He was sort of an old school comic dealer in Tampa. He was a middle school teacher. So he was sort of running the Tampa Comic and Toy Convention as just something to do for fun, sort of a half hobby, half business sort of thing. He ran it 3 times a year. It was a one-day show held 3 times a year in a little hotel ballroom. And it was a highly regarded show, but it was always, you know, a local show, and sort of just, it would get 500 to 1,000 people. And by the time 2010 rolled around, it wasn't due to business issues he had with the Tampa venue he had. He actually brought it across the bay to Largo, which is sort of an industrial kind of area. I wasn't even in Tampa proper anymore. And at that point, the attendance was at its lowest point in the 500 to 600 range. And that's at that point is when we bought it. We actually, my business partner, Bill, and I, we attempted to buy it in 2006 because Tim was sort of getting burned out of running the shows. Like I said, he was a middle school teacher. He wasn't really doing this full time. He had other obligations and such. So he was interested in selling it in 2006. That deal ended up not happening. But we kept in touch, and we actually set up at the Tampa show when we were both comic dealers. It was just a show that I attended as an attendee, actually, for the first time. When I first went to the show, it was in 2003, just as an attendee. Obviously, in later 2000s, I was a comic book dealer, so I'd set up there. And then 2010, we sort of revisited negotiations that didn't happen in 2006. We revisited those and bought it in 2010.
So you just couldn't come to terms in 2006?
Maybe it was partially terms, but also I don't think that Tim was quite ready to sell it. He had an inkling that he wanted to sell it, but, you know, it was still, he had pride in it and everything. So I don't think he was quite ready. He wasn't sure that he was burned out yet. So.
And then it reached its lowest point, 2010. You guys swoop in. I guess, so for about 4 years at this point, you've already sort of in the back of your mind been thinking of this. So it wasn't just like, here's an opportunity, let's grab it. Now let's figure out what the hell to do.
Right. Yeah. We had already talked about it. We'd revisited it. We didn't know if it would ever happen, but yeah, we had already sort of thought of this in our mind about it being a possibility.
And so how many years did you then, you take over Tampa Bay, how many years did you build up Tampa Bay until you decided we need to go to more cities?
Let's see. So we started in 2010. Our early expansion efforts were not successful. So we first attempted to go to Orlando, which is my city, the city that I'm born and raised in. My business partner's in Tampa. So Orlando, we tried going to in 2011 with an event called Orlando Comic Expo. Or no, was that 2012, we tried going to Orlando, and we had it in a hotel ballroom near the Orlando airport, and it got, I think, about 1,000 people. So for a one-day show, for a first time out, it wasn't too bad. So that was our first expansion effort. And then our first out-of-state expansion effort was Nashville Comic Expo, which that was in September of 2013. And that was a major failure for us. I think it may have been too early. You know, at this point, Tampa wasn't even that big yet, especially when you consider that for each of these events, you really have to plan a year in advance. So if Orlando Comic Expo debuted in, I think it was September of 2012, we'd started planning it and call it September 2011. So at that point, we'd really had a full year under our belt doing Tampa. So we were still pretty new. So both of those endeavors were not successful for us.
You think it was just the lack of sort of run-up time?
No, we had enough run-up time, just didn't have enough experience running Tampa, because we'd only been, like I said, running Tampa Bay Comic-Con for a year at that point. And, or I guess by the time Nashville planning started, 2 years, but just wasn't much time. We needed a lot more time to develop and learn.
And were you running it full time at this point?
No. So it was difficult. So I was working BNY Mellon, which is a very large custodial bank. It's Bank of New York Mellon. I was doing mutual fund work. So in these early days from 2010 all the way until 2013, I was juggling both the conventions and my full-time finance job.
Wow. And so I'm just trying to get like what sort of the mindset was. You take it over after 4 years of wanting to, you take it over and immediately you want to expand. Like, I mean, within 2 years, you tried to expand two different places. Did you just know that that's sort of what the company needed, was expansion to other cities?
Well, first and foremost, we knew what we wanted to do with Tampa. We wanted to, well, step one was bringing it back to the city of Tampa. So our first show was, like I said, in Largo. It was at this sort of recreational facility. It's called the Minreg facility. It's basically a basketball court kind of thing. So step one was to bring it back to Tampa. We knew that we had to do that. So we did that for 2011. First show in 2011, because we're maintaining this 3-show-per-year format at this point. So the first show in 2011, we bring it back to the city of Tampa, and instantly that helps with attendance. I think our first show had 550 people in Largo, and then our second show in Tampa had 750. And then after that, our third show, which is our second show in Tampa, I think went up to about 1,000. So already just bringing it back to Tampa helped. So by the time 2011 comes to an end, looking at 2012, I'm already thinking of how I can scale it up. So instead of being 3 1-day shows per year, I'm looking to scale it up to be 2 2-day shows per year. So that was the goal from the outset with Tampa, was to bring it back to Tampa and to scale it up. As far as the expansion element with Orlando and Nashville, I don't know that we had a specific formula in mind. We just thought that more shows equals growth. I don't know if we thought of anything beyond that other than more shows equals growth.
Which I guess, I mean, in the simplest sense, that's true if the shows are successful.
Right.
Because as you've known, and is the Tampa Bay show now once or twice per year?
It's once per year. It's a 3-day show once per year.
So what's the thinking behind that? So from 4 shows a year to 2 shows, I think you said 2 days to 1 show.
Yeah, so 2011 was 3 1-day shows. 2012 was 2. I'm talking about just Tampa. Yeah. I'm leaving out Nashville and Orlando for this. So 2012 was 2 2-day shows. And so we think that if we scale up the event rather than the frequency, that we'll be able to draw in the bigger name artists, the comic artists. We're able to be possibly draw in celebrity guests. We hadn't done the celebrity thing yet until late 2012 was our first celebrity guest. We think that scaling it up helps, and also scaling it up in terms of the amount of days, it's sort of an economies of scale sort of thing. You're going to pay full price. This is from the production side. You're going to pay full price for 1 day, for a 1-day event. But if you're running a 2-day event, it's not like you're paying double the price. You're going to get some, you know, you might only pay half again. So say a 2-day event really only costs 1.5 times what it would cost to run a 1-day event. And then if you have a 3-day event, it might only cost 1.75 times what it costs to run a 1-day event. So if you scale up that way, you're going to have some benefits in terms of economies of scale, I think.
And I guess the excitement around, well, if I miss this one, it's not happening in 3 months as well. This is it.
Yeah, it gives it more of a sense of occasion. So that helps.
How has, since 2010, I'm completely out of the loop in this, but how has the comic industry and sort of the Comic-Con industry changed from 2010 to 2018?
So in 2010, they're just the market saturation wasn't there. Right now it's highly competitive. So at the time, some major cities didn't have any comic convention. Now you can't find a major city that not only doesn't have one convention, but most have two or three, sometimes more conventions. So the market saturation is really, I don't know when it'll stop, but right now it's quite competitive. And then also, the big thing is the celebrity component of conventions has really changed. In 2010, like I said, our convention hadn't had a celebrity guest yet. We didn't have our first celebrity until 2012. But the whole celebrity concept of celebrities being guests at conventions for autographs and photo ops with attendees wasn't quite there yet. So when we first started trying to get celebrities in 2012, and we were trying to make these contacts with agencies in Hollywood, most of them seemed to not even know what we're talking about. Like, Comic-Con, what are you talking about? So it was tough to get them sort of on board with what we're looking for and what they're supposed to be, what a celebrity appearance is. And then fast forward to now all these major agencies have people that are devoted to just doing convention bookings for the talent that are in their agency. You have just huge, huge run-ups in what celebrities are looking for to be able to attend a convention. And it's really bad now in terms of what us as promoters are on the hook for, but I guess concurrently to that is what attendees have to pay to meet them, and it's just pretty crazy in my opinion. So in 8 years' time, you've gone from celebrities and agencies either not knowing or barely knowing what a Comic-Con is to 2018, to where they're fully dialed in and the price gouge is at just full throttle.
Again, I'm totally on the outside of this, Stephen. But in 2010, like, I would assume that the celebrity, quote unquote, celebrity model of the comic industry was also vastly different than it is today. Like, I don't know exactly when sort of Marvel, I guess, got bought by Disney or whatever and became this huge comic sort of, it seems like, revolution from the outside, where it's no longer just like this group of people who just, they read comic books? To now it's like a massive industry, TV shows, movies, endlessly.
Yeah, that's a very...
Is that actually true or is that just me from the outside?
It's certainly exactly true. So, well, I would say that, so the first major comic movie was X-Men, that was in 2000, and then Spider-Man was 2002. So as the years go on and more of these movies comes out, it's hitting more and more of the mainstream. You know, it takes time for it to... for the culture to spread from just being a niche sort of thing to being where it is now, to where everybody knows who Iron Man is. But at the time, like, just I use Iron Man as an example, in 2000, nobody other than comic book readers knew who Iron Man was. He was like a second string Marvel hero. His villains were all just second string. He was not a major player. I mean, he was, but only comic book people knew who Iron Man was. And now Iron Man is perhaps the best known of the Marvel characters. So it went from being something to where it was comic shops. You had comic nerds that were really interested in comic books and collecting the cards and the toys. But outside of that, it was not a mainstream sort of thing. The movies come out in the early 2000s. And then in 2012, you have the Avengers movie come out, and that breaks all sorts of, you know, blockbuster records and everything. And all these movies compiling on top of each other and breaking records, you know, now Marvel and DC are fully in the just general populace. Everybody knows all the characters.
Exactly. And I mean, looking back, it looks like you had this like brilliant foresight. Like, you bought something which looks like a steal at this point in 2010. Like, did you feel Or did that play any part in like this sort of change in the market? And it's going from like almost its lowest point to now it's just who knows where the top is going to be.
So we did buy it, I think, at a deal. We didn't know where it would go. I knew where I wanted to take it. I didn't know if that would actually happen. There were conventions that had celebrities, for example, but it wasn't like it is now. So I don't know if I knew where it was going to go. I knew where I wanted to take it. I just didn't know if I could get there.
Where did you want to take it?
I want to take it to where it is now. I just didn't know if that was possible. I wanted to have, ever since the beginning, so there was a small show that was in Orlando called FX. It was started out as primarily a toy show, and then it sort of became a toy and comic show, and it was around in the early and mid-2000s. And I set up there when I was a comic dealer in 2006 or 7 or something like that. And I remember they had Hayden Panettiere there, and she was from the Heroes TV show. And remember I had a huge crush on her, and I'm like, oh, if I have a convention, then I'll have an excuse to invite her to the show. And that was, weirdly enough, that was sort of like the first sort of celebrity I wanted to have at our show, and what sort of got me into thinking that we could have celebrity at the show. And I'm like, it's weird that that's what I was working towards, just a celebrity that I had a crush on, but that's just how my mind worked at that moment in time, 10 years ago or something, 8 years ago. We actually never ended up having her at the show. We took that celebrity component and ran with it, I suppose.
And early on, the idea, like whether consciously or not, you just knew that growth was more shows. So now, 8 years on, what does growth look like for Imaginarium?
Well, it looks like growing the shows that we have. So we had 2 new shows this year that were debut shows. We had Atlanta and Detroit, and those are both fantastic shows. My strategy has always been to try to go into cities where there's no competition or little competition, or if there is competition, make sure that it's different enough to where we stand sort of alone or apart. So in Atlanta, for example, there's a major show there that was actually coincidentally just this past weekend. It's called Dragon Con, and it's one of the largest shows in the country. And people might look at that and say, why would you go into Atlanta? There's already a huge show here. And our way of thinking was that Dragon Con specifically is a very different show than what we are. Yes, it's pop culture, but I look at it sort of as San Diego Comic-Con, to where they're so unique in what they do that they can never be, no other convention could be mistaken for them. So even though we're a pop culture convention, we're so different from Dragon Con. Dragon Con's more of a party convention. It's spread out over all these different hotel venues rather than being in a centralized location, such as a convention center like we are. So we went into Atlanta knowing that we were going to be different. So, and then in Detroit, sort of the same thing. There's a major show there, but it's not in the city of Detroit. It's in a suburb of Detroit. So we're the only comic convention that's in right downtown in Detroit. So we're going to stick with those 2 shows and grow those 2 shows. They were magnificent. And then the other shows that we have, you know, Tampa is obviously our longest running show. And this past, or 2018, was our second highest attendance for that show yet. I don't know the exact number, but I'm guessing it was in the high 40,000 person attendance area. And Indiana Comic Con was our first successful expansion show, which we started in 2014. There was no competition at all in Indianapolis, which is one of the reasons I went there. And it's been a fantastic show since day one. Day one, it was a blockbuster. We had no idea what to expect, and it was just gangbusters from day one. And that's actually our largest show overall for our company now. This past year, we had, I think, 55,100 people at that show. So just keep on growing the 5 shows that we have, making sure they're quality events, not only from production standpoint, but also from a standpoint of trying to be creative and innovative with our offerings. I always want to try to offer new stuff for attendees to see and do. So
to run a conference that has 55,000 people attend it over a couple days, how many people does it take? Like, what does the team look like for that?
Our core team is about 30 people. And then beyond that, we have a lot of local hires that that don't travel around with us around the country. But I would say that 30 people, you know, will travel, or the majority of them will travel to our five shows around the country. And then beyond that, we'll have, beyond that 30 core team, we'll have about maybe 50 to 100 local hires. Most of them are from the local colleges, but not exclusively. And beyond that hiring pool, we have lots of other contractors that we have, such as venue security or whatever the local police are, or EMTs or things like that.
And so you, as a co-founder, do you run sort of like the sales and marketing, or like the operations side of this?
I do the advertising side. I do the social media. I do exhibitors. So I'm the one that reviews all the exhibitor applications and sends out the invoices and stuff for approved exhibitors. I do all the copywriting. So everything that you read on our website is all written by me. I do the graphic design concepts. I'm not the actual graphic designer, but I'm the one that will come up with the concepts. And I do the PR. I don't actually do the PR work. We've hired someone to do that, but I'm sort of a manager of the PR. And then my business partner does all the boring stuff that I hate doing, like the employee relations and all the contracts and the legal stuff and more of the logistical things, moving stuff around, things like that.
Logistically, though, it sounds like a super complicated, like move into a new city. You're not even from the city. And now you've got 30 people that have traveled with you and another 100 or so that you have to now put this convention together quickly.
Yeah, it is. It is a challenge, especially since when you're going into that new city, obviously you don't have anyone that you know. You don't have any boots on the ground. So after the first year, it's good because we've hired, like I said, 50 to 100 locals. And now out of those 50 to 100 locals, we've already got all those contacts. And from those contacts, we already can sort of pluck out the really good and driven employees from that pool that we might want to hire on to be managers of some sort, or at the very least to come back the following year, or to be some larger role in the company. So that first year is always the toughest because you just don't know anybody.
How do you mitigate against risk? Like for a convention that size, I would assume that there's a significant outlay of funds and just people.
Yeah, it's scary. it's sort of a tradition that my business partner and I have, of where come Friday morning and certainly Saturday morning, because Saturday is always the big attendance day, we'll just sort of be sitting out up front in the common areas, sort of vaguely near the box office, and we'll just sort of sit there an hour in advance of the show and just watch people coming in. And I suppose that hairs are probably falling out of our head just out of worry, because really you don't know with this sort of thing. I mean, you'll have some pre-sales, but the pre-sales aren't enough to keep the show afloat if no one came to the box office to buy a day of. So really, you don't know if the show is a success until you're actually there and looking at it in the present. So there's no way to mitigate risk other than just being smart with the spending as best you can and saving where you can and things like that. But as far as knowing how the show is going to turn out before, I mean, we can sort of look at pre-sales and try to guess, but really we don't know until we're actually there day of looking at it.
And you're still guessing. That's,
yeah.
That's crazy, Stephen. I thought you were going to tell me, like, well, with pre-sales, usually like 3 or 4 months in advance, we've broken even, and then with vendors. But no, that's... And so say with, I guess it was Indianapolis,
yeah.
55,000 people show up. What, when you guys are heading into it, do you have sort of like a window where you like, okay, well, if we have 35,000 to 50,000, or like, and did you have a goal for it? Like, what was it? If this was your largest one ever?
Yeah, I don't know. We didn't really have a goal. It's always just to get as many people as we can, but we didn't have a goal. We sort of know in our head kind of vaguely what number we need to break even. But other than that, we don't really have a goal per se.
Really? So you just, and I mean, you're in a place that doesn't have another convention, so you're literally just going off of your gut. This feels like a place that will draw X amount of people. Well, you don't even say X amount of people. It'll draw enough to pay for all of this.
Yeah. We sort of vaguely know how many we need to keep it going the next year. And you always hope that, like, for instance, in a new town, the first year is going to be the toughest year. So, for example, we go to Detroit. Well, year one in Detroit, we don't have a mailing list to work from because we've never been there before. We don't have any attendees that have previously purchased before. We don't have anything. So after year one, we'll have however many attendees purchased. We'll already have those on our mailing list, and we'll have our built-up Facebook and everything. And then hopefully year two, we'll add some new customer base as well as hopefully retaining a significant amount of year one's attendance, and it'll grow, hopefully. Wow. You never really know.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so physical mailing or email?
We do more email. Physical mailing, we'd like to find a way to do that. It's just logistically speaking, like, it's tough to compile that much information because usually our box office is pretty hectic and we're just trying to move people. We're not really concentrating on trying to harvest information, which we should, but our goal one is always to on the production side of making sure that we're processing people, so we don't have a ton of time to collect info.
Fair enough. And so with the hyper sort of competitive nature now of this convention market, how do you guys as Imaginarium, you have a hugely successful show in Indianapolis, the first one ever in that area. How do you keep that market or stop somebody from just coming in and doing one next year?
Well, the nature of the convention, like I mentioned at the very beginning, is that at least this year, four of our shows were all compiled in the summer months, and one of them was in the spring, which is Indiana. And that's for a reason. It's not a reason of our choosing. It's a reason because all the venues right now are very busy, and we get the space that nobody else wants because we're a consumer event, and consumer events are always the least important to venues. It's always the professional trade shows that get the preferred dates. And so you can see that we're compiled all in the summer because those are the only dates that these venues have left because everyone else takes the other dates. And that means that if we're compiled in the summer, that means there's not many more dates to go around. Because if there was, then we wouldn't be compiled in the summer. We'd be spread out throughout the year. You can see that there's this compression that's due to all these venues being really busy. And so from that standpoint, it's actually difficult for competition to physically come into one of our venues because there's just not much availability for that to happen. It's a seller's market for venues right now. It may have not been like that in 2010 when we started, but now they have their pick of the litter and it's tough to get space.
Wow. So that's pretty cool. And so this compresses you five shows within a few months span. You almost probably go from one to the next to the next. And if we go back to the very first answer, which was this drive and working 365 days a year, I'm sure there's people listening and being like, how do you work 365 days a year if all of your shows are within a couple months?
So it takes, you know, a year of planning to put one of these on. So even though the show itself might be, I don't know, just call June 8th to 10th was our San Francisco show this year. So call that the show itself. It's not like we only started working a couple weeks leading up to that. We were working from the show the previous year. So it takes months to, for example, to book all the comic creators that we book for these shows, or to book the celebrity guests, or to do all the hiring, or for me to book all the advertising that I do, and for me to produce all the advertising that we do for all the advertising buys, for us to hire everybody that we need to hire, for us to do all the printing we need to print, and all that. So it actually is stressful for all the production side, for all the shows themselves to be compressed so highly in a short period of time, because that's a lot of traveling, and it's a lot of, even though the planning is a year in advance, you still have things that happen right leading up to the show. Like, for example, I'm having to make sure that all of our advertising is going off without a hitch. Like, I'm always paranoid that, I don't know, some advertising buy, they're going to forget to run it, and they're going to say, oh, well, we didn't run it. We'll give you a refund. But, you know, that doesn't help me because the show's gone. I need that advertising. The show's already passed. So I'm always having to check up on these things and make sure they didn't forget about us. It's really a year-round thing. It's just that there are certain things that happen far out from the show, and there are certain things that happen midterm, and there are certain things that happen really close to the show.
And it probably puts a large portion of the company's revenue all within that time span as well.
Yeah, there's a big spend, you know, the month, I would say, leading up, a month and a half, because that's when we're buying all the celebrity airfares. Celebrities take forever to get back to us with when they need their purchase. So we're always having to buy those last minute, which of course means it's more expensive. And lots of, I guess, down payments that were made a year in advance. Now the full payment's coming due for whatever bill it might be. So yeah, there's a lot of spend that comes month leading up to the show.
Do you get to use economies of scale for, like, so let's hire this celebrity, but let's get them for three shows, or let's get these vendors, but let's get them for all five shows? Or do people not like to travel like that?
You don't really get, well, on the celebrity side, you don't really get economies of scale on the price so much. You more get economies of, I guess, convenience. I would say it's more of, say, you've got, so you want to book, I don't know, John Smith for this show. We've got five shows this year. Let's book him for all five shows right now, rather than, since you've got five shows, we'll put him into all five of your shows right now, rather than booking him at this other guy's show who only has one show. It's on your same show's weekend, but we're not going to book him at your show because we want to give your company the preference since you've got five shows and your competitor only has one. So you'll get preferential sort of treatment in that respect sometimes.
Does that make you push to have more shows, or are you happy now with five?
I'm happy with five. Always looking to grow. Like I said, I've got the drive to grow, but yeah, I'm more than happy with five.
That's awesome. All right. So we've got to talk, I guess, about these five shows throughout, Stephen. You're the first comic convention person I've ever had on the show, so it's been a great talk. But there's people listening out there now who are probably wanting to check out one of these. Could you specifically tell everybody the five shows, where they are, and then where they can find out about these shows?
Sure. So you can find those on all of those respective websites. So it'd be Tampa Bay Comic Convention.com, Indiana Comic Convention.com, and so forth. Tampa takes place at the Tampa Convention Center. Indiana takes place at the Indianapolis Convention Center. Michigan takes place at the Cobo Center in downtown Detroit. San Francisco actually takes place in Oakland now at the Oakland Convention Center. And then, which one did I leave out? Oh, Atlanta takes place at the Georgia World Congress Center in downtown Atlanta.
Nice. Hopefully you'll get up to Canada at some point.
So that was the conversation. I hope you enjoyed it. It's now the part in the show where we're going to pull this conversation apart. We're going to go through it, and we're going to find that one thing that Stephen said. Are you ready? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
And that was, weirdly enough, that was sort of like the first sort of celebrity I wanted to have at our show, and what sort of got me into thinking that we could have celebrity at the show. And I'm like, it's weird that that's what I was working towards, just a celebrity that I had a crush on. But that's just how my mind worked at that moment in time, 10 years ago or something, 8 years ago. We actually never ended up having her at the show. We took that celebrity component and ran with it, I suppose.
And that's the hack. Stephen. I love this. I love this because it's unlike any other hack I've ever had on the show. And I think that's because it's sort of like an indirect hack. And I love it. And it's you looking back, thinking back 8 to 10 years about having your potential first celebrity based on a crush you had on somebody, and even admitting that how odd that is, yet it's such a defining moment in your business that led you to where you are. And the reason why I want to pick this out, and the reason why I want to emphasize this to you out there listening, is because this is about intuition. This is about having that feeling in your gut that something is right, or that something you should just go with, even if it feels maybe a bit odd at the time. You need to do it. Because these are the defining moments in our lives, in our businesses, in our ideas, that 5, 8, 10 years later, we look back and like, oh yeah, it was kind of funny and weird that I did that, but I followed it. I followed that intuition. I went for it. And that's the only reason I am where I am today. Stephen, thank you so very, very much. All right. Well, I had an absolute blast. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website. Make sure you head over there. I'll have the show notes for this. The things we talked about, I'll get links to all of Stephen's comic conventions. If you are in the Tampa Bay, the San Francisco, the Atlanta, Michigan area, you should check it out. I think it'd be pretty cool. You can go say hi to Stephen. Tell him where you heard about him. I think he'd probably dig that. All right. It's been fun. I appreciate you so much stopping by as always. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.